Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Here we go again. It's Spin the Rally Pod, back for another episode. And believe it or not, we do prepare for every one of these podcasts with a very carefully drawn out plan of action. And who knows, today may be the day that we follow those stage notes, but I wouldn't bank on it. I'm Lisa O'Sullivan, a humble rally fan, and in the company of the esteemed David Evans, who's senior writer at Dirtfish.com, former team boss George Donaldson, and Dirtfish.com's very own special voice of rally, Colin Clark. Now, it's great to be back with you guys, but before we get on to any kind of rally conversation, there's one hot topic we do have to touch on. George Donaldson, I understand since the last episode, you have been allowed out of lockdown in Scotland.
Yeah, we were allowed a little bit out, a short distance. Fortunately, I live a short distance from some interesting features. So I went out and did some canoeing. Water sports are allowed.
Have they let your legs out, George?
Unfortunately, there was no directive against not wearing shorts.
Yeah, because that's common sense, George. That's common sense.
That would be common sense disappeared on the 24th of March, unfortunately.
So hang on, let's pause this for a second, George. You've been in lockdown for how many months? You're naturally quite pale-skinned. Yes. Some might say blue. Yes. And you decide to launch yourself into Scottish midsummer straight into shorts.
Water included.
On the water.
On water. On a canoe. On the River Tay for 7 hours.
George, I can feel the heat.
I have massively blistered legs. And you know what's really interesting was I didn't realise this, but I was in at work yesterday and I had to wear shorts going in, so I was getting laughed at. But when you go into work, into our office and workshops, you get your temperature taken every time. So they do a skin temperature. So he did a skin temperature on my head, like you always do, and it's like 31 degrees or whatever it is. He did my legs above the burn. And it went off the charts. No, it's 29 degrees there, down onto the burn, and it was 34 and a half.
Oh!
I had no idea that there was such a massive difference. I didn't realise that sunburn bits are
actually hotter. Apart from the big red blisters, George.
Well, the big red blisters, it looks like it would be hotter, but I didn't realise it was physically hotter.
Could you, today, George, be a stunt double for somebody in Chernobyl 2, for example?
That's slightly inappropriate. That was horrendous. But if you focus just on one bit of my legs, it is pretty horrendous. Right across where my kneecaps were, where it's all now swollen to death. This is four days ago now, guys. I've got massive series of water blisters on my
leg. George.
On my right knee, it's much the same, a little bit smaller. They are very, very tender over such a small area, literally just either side of my knee.
Are you going to tweet a picture, George?
No way. I don't have athletic legs, apparently, according to one of my colleagues at work who's a football coach.
If we carry on much like this, George, they're going to have to go out with an advisory on this podcast.
Adult content only or something like that.
George, I am so surprised, George, because, you know, you and I have travelled together an awful lot over the years.
And Colin, you know how religious I am with suntan and preserve.
Absolutely religious. Colin, where's your hat? How can you possibly go out in this heat without a hat?
That's all true, Colt, but I've got to bring us all back to one central problem here, and it's the sunshine.
Yes.
I've always said it.
Oh, nice try, David. Nice try. No, Colin, complete stupid. I was excited to get out on the canoe. the suntan lotion was lying there in the house and we forgot it. And we didn't even realise we'd forgotten it until lunchtime. And we actually stopped, for anyone that knows Scotland at all, take a look at a photograph of a bridge over the River Tay at a place called McClure, spelled, I think it's M-E-I-K-L-O-U-R. McClure is how it's pronounced.
Beautiful place.
Famous beach hedge that's there. But anyway, there's a beautiful bridge which I think was built in about 1750. And it's never had very much done to it, apart from had concrete around the base. Now, normally, the River Tay is a river in UK, in the United Kingdom. Has more flow in it, apparently, than all the other rivers in England put together. I find that hard to believe until you sit there on it and look at it and you realise just how much water is going through. As usual,
George, can I tell you something, George? You spend way too much time thinking about things like that and not enough time thinking about the common sense things like long trousers, suntan lotion, all those things. But anyway, so, George, we feel for you. We really do.
George, you should have known better.
Yeah, anyway, so I got burnt to death.
King of sunscreen, usually. I'm disgusted with you this time around. But let's get on to the rally news. Let's get on to the rally news because we've got big news, really, from New Zealand across the globe. They've declared themselves COVID-free, but it's come far too late for the rally. We're not going to have Rally New Zealand this year. And it looks like GB could be about to be called off as well. I notice on the dirtfish.com website, David, it's when, not if, we're going to lose GB. But let's talk about New Zealand first.
Well, yeah, I'm not entirely sure. You know, of course, they are COVID-free, coronavirus-free now. But, you know, part of the ongoing process of remaining coronavirus-free is that they keep their borders shut. You know, they are an enclosed island somewhere in the South Pacific. And as long as they don't let anybody in, they will remain coronavirus-free. So it's great. You know, it was always going to be very, very difficult for the rally to go ahead because it involves a huge travelling circus of diseased Europeans heading down there. And, you know, to be quite honest, you absolutely cannot blame them for postponing.
I'm not here. It's not for me. It's not for me. Not in. David, is that you?
Whisht, Colin. Whisht your noise. Whisht
your
noise.
Have we gone back to the 19th century?
Oh, good Lord, it just won't stop. Hang on a sec.
Do you know, that just sums up everything I thought about David Evans. He really lives in the 19th century, doesn't he?
Splendid.
Down
to five. He has to stand at the wall and speak to the phone with a little ear cup on his ear.
Did you just say Darabee, Lise?
I did.
Are you you're all creatures great and small?
I am.
Oh, fabulous. Yeah. Fabulous.
Me too.
I read them all when I was younger.
Yeah. I have to say, when the children first started, when they were at home for
Can we talk
lockdown,
about rallies, please, guys?
Just
no,
one thing.
I want to hear this
just
story.
Every lunchtime, we would have our sandwiches as a special treat in the sitting room, and we watched some All Creatures Great and Small, because that was my youth. When I sat with my mother, I used to come back from wherever.
I didn't like the characters on the TV. The TV
Siegfried.
I don't think
how could you object to Siegfried?
Siegfried was okay. Siegfried was okay.
Tristan.
He was okay. Yes. I didn't like the James Herriot character. I thought he was stiff. I thought he was a bit stiff.
I could see a bit of Siegfried in you there, George, actually. A real
not much rallying action.
Do you know what, David? Do you know when I was at school? When I was about 16, you had to go to the careers office, obviously, and you had to put down what you were going to be. I was going to be a vet when I was 16. Yeah, I never quite mastered chemistry, unfortunately. Biology I was quite good at, surprisingly.
I could see you with your hand delving deep into
Should we just say gloved up?
Yeah.
Quite managed it, but there we go. But I did once, can I tell you?
This conversation needs to move very quickly
before
I say something that's completely wrong, guys. It's on its way. Here it comes.
George, but I have to tell you, I have to just finish this story very quickly. I did once deliver a longhorn calf. I did. genuinely. She was beautiful. Got me into a lot of trouble, but I did do that once. That's a story for another day.
That now sounds like you were doing something you really shouldn't have been doing, Colin. And the cow wasn't even pregnant.
I shouldn't have been.
I really think we should move on.
Told you. Couldn't help myself. It was going to come.
New Zealand. Deceased Europeans. Yeah, sheep.
So, essentially, it was never going to happen, was it? If we're completely brutally honest, and you look at the moves that they're making towards the America's Cup, you know, the biggest money spinner in all of New Zealand, and they haven't opened the doors to let the teams come in yet for the America's Cup, which is it's worth millions and millions, and if they're willing to sacrifice that event, which quite rightly they are. I don't know, quite rightly for America's Cup, I'm not sure if they can just postpone that for a year. But apparently, and obviously, sport has to take second place right now. And that's how New Zealand has got to the status of COVID-free. And that's how it's going to stay that way. And we have to just suck it up and hopefully go back there next year.
But I think that's the encouraging thing, isn't it, David? You know, we all thought this was a one-off opportunity. It was almost a stopgap, wasn't it, for Rally Australia? The promoter, various people weren't happy with Coffs Harbour.
Yeah.
Political difficulties in finding another venue in Australia that was suitable to everyone. So, okay, well, New Zealand, they want it for a year. We'll go to New Zealand. We'll come back in 2021 to Australia. But the good news is it does look as if we will get New Zealand next year, all being well.
Colin, what's the format? What format were they using? What route were they taking? Were they based down in the harbour in Auckland?
Yeah.
Because the America's Cup was going to be there. Where were they going to base it?
They were based, were they not, south of the airport or somewhere around the airport? And they were going to use a lot of the classic
stages. We used to be based
stages.
Out there. It was an absolutely awful event.
Was the
airport travel lodge used to be
Well, I might be wrong.
George,
I'm very sorry. I might be wrong. David, where do you think it was based?
I thought it was downtown Auckland, but you've now got me questioning that. And of course, we never actually saw a route. But it was my understanding was that they were using some Auckland tourism, New Zealand tourism cash to essentially showcase New Zealand again ahead of the America's Cup. We were running in September, they were in March. Now my concern was immediately if we ran over into next year, into a September date in 2021, what's the point of showcasing the America's Cup when it's been and gone and it's not coming back potentially for another 3 years? So I put that question to the organisers and they said, no, we have an allocated budget which we can carry over to next year. See, the good thing about this is, if there is a silver lining to this particular cloud, it is that it buys everybody time to sort everything out in Australia. That's news to me, Cole, that they've got something up and running for next year. I think
wasn't quite clear what I said there. That was the initial plan, wasn't it, was to get it up and running for next year. There's absolutely nothing concrete yet from Australia.
No,
they're working very hard, and it looks a lot more positive than it did 6 months ago, but, you know, there's nothing concrete yet from Australia.
It does look more promising, and, you know, there's talk of this Bathurst event and all manner of things, and there's talk of us going back to Coffs Harbour again. But crucially, it buys us that extra year for everybody to just settle down, go back to New Zealand in 21, and then look to go back to Australia in 2022. The same can definitely be said for Wales, in that this would buy us another year for Motorsport UK to potentially look for another region for us to go to. We know that the investment from the Welsh government is on a sliding scale. It's really not a lot compared to what it was when they first started 20 years ago. And they need money to supplement that Welsh investment. So we're what would have been year two of a three-year deal this year. Having that extra 12 months, it means that the Motorsport UK commercial types can go away, go and talk to Scotland, to Northern Ireland, to Yorkshire, to the Northwest, the Northeast, everybody, and see if we can find a new way to run our event.
Can I ask a stupid question? If we're in year two of a three-year deal, is that money still spent? Derby 8-5.
That's a little bit more modern, isn't it, than Derby?
It's a bit more modern.
Is that me? That's me. I'm sorry. So I can't even do anything about it. I'll just have to
That's
ring
fine.
Out.
We'll
just, I'm
really we'll move sorry. On. We'll move on. So is that money available for next year, or is it spent?
It's very, very complicated, Lisa. I'm sure it's not to the people in the know, but you see, there was this pause element of the contract, wasn't there? This clause where they could take a year out from being in Wales, and the Welsh government was happy for. There was a huge amount of talk about it going to Belfast and to Northern Ireland. The Circuit of Ireland was coming back. And the idea was that Wales would run in 1 year, then it would pause. So say Wales ran in 19, in 20 we would go to Belfast, in 21 we would come back to Wales. And the anticipation was that the 21 money would be year two money, so the money would still be there. I don't know how that will work and how it will play out under these very different circumstances. But there is that ability to pause. And how long you can pause and then come back to Wales for, I don't know. It's possible we could go to another part of Britain for 3 years and then come back to Wales. I think it's probably quite optimistic to expect that year two money would still be waiting for you 3 or 4 years down the line when you've been in Yorkshire or somewhere else for 3 years. It's complicated.
I'll be really boring here. I'll say it again. Nobody's got any money. In case anybody didn't notice, nobody's going to have any money.
That's the thing.
It's not, George. Sorry. It's not 100% true, because what we've always known in when you look at any sort of financial crisis in the past, you know, there are organisations, particularly government organisations, who have money to spend to stimulate the economy, and that's sure. where, sure in some ways, that's where rallying is. In a slightly better, there's a lot about rallying which makes it very, very difficult in these times. But what in some ways works for us is that we are appealing to, in particular, to tourism authorities, to local governments, because we do showcase, and they will need to showcase. They will need to get people back. New Zealand will need to get people coming back again when they open their borders, as will Australia, New South Wales, as will Wales and Northern Ireland. So that money, I suspect you will find it if you tap in the right people. It's not easy. But
I mean, all these rallies are already obviously tapped into these organisations. It's just that, just in case you hadn't noticed, that the government has, like, you know, all the governments have just spent ludicrous amounts of money, and they're going to have to spend ludicrous amounts more kickstarting it.
But a huge amount of
scrutiny that the whole thing will be under, you know.
And that's the irony.
An awful lot of, you know, I mean, I hate to be the harbinger, but, you know, honestly.
This is the irony of this situation, isn't it? That it is actually the fact that Rally GB has a regional government as a principal backer that's probably nobbled it for, or certainly helped to nobble it for this year. When you look at those quotes that came out of the First Minister at the weekend saying, no, you know, we will not have tourists coming here. We're not going to open our hotels. We're not going to open whatever. When you're not opening hotels, you cannot conceive running a rally. Although, having said that, you know, we're so close to Chester, everybody could just jump over the border and stay in England.
I think you'll find it'll be a very few select banks and liquidators that own everything at the end of all this. You know, there'll be no private ownership left. Everyone will be cleaned out. I mean, every day I'm reading about hotels and tourist things. Just actually, you know, they've been trying to maintain some sort of equilibrium during this period, and now they're just realising, no, they're knackered, and they're going out of business. Another six hotels this weekend away, I think. All the hydro hotels in Scotland, all away now.
We're going to have to wait and see how that pans out, though.
Yeah.
So we know that GB, as you've put it on the website, and as I've mentioned, David, a question of when, not if, it's going to be cancelled. Finland, though, has gone.
Finland has gone. Tragically, it was essentially...
I really want to go to Finland. I've never been to Finland. Finland looks like the rally fans' rally to go to.
There's a Monty Python song, Finland, Finland, Finland for me.
Yes. Yeah. You sing that, David? Do you know that one?
No, I just about struggled my way through the opening theme tune of All Creatures Great and Small. I suspect Monty Python might be a step too far. But yeah, Finland has gone. It's a huge tragedy. It is. It's an annual pilgrimage for everybody involved in the sport. It's the fastest rally in the world, and arguably, you know, it's a spiritual home of our sport. And to see that one go, you know, you kind of realize it's a huge deal for us. Again, it was born out of the fact that they were they're 2 months away, I think, from running, and it was all just too close.
Yeah, David, can I throw a question in? Can I throw a question? George said he was being the harbinger of doom. I think I'm undercutting.
Isn't it harbinger?
I don't know. What is it? Harbinger? Harbinger? Harbinger?
I'd say harbinger, but...
Would you? Yeah. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Apologies.
So, potato.
I say tomato.
I'll say harbinger.
Got it.
You know, do we have to start worrying yet, discussing, debating about next year's calendar?
Yes.
Do we have to start worrying about events running next year?
Yes, of course we do. Of course we do.
Oh,
because
yeah, that's a disaster.
There are events that are financially sound. Finland is commercially one of the strongest rallies, I would say. You know, it has a great business model for selling tickets. We've all, you know, apart from Lise, we've all seen it, and it works. Not all events. Sorry,
yeah,
Lise.
David, David, you say that, you know, that they do have a sound business model that relies on ticket sales. You know, 12 months from now, are we going to be in, you know, such a good position that they can sell however many tickets they want to sell? Or do you think there'll be restrictions in place? I'm sure there still will be in 12 months' time.
Without getting into the global economics of this, and my feeling is that George is quite right. You know, the world is in billions and gazillions and trillions of pounds worth of debt right now, and we will have to pay that money back. We will. You know, the taxpayer will be footing the bill for that. But the government cannot sting the entire population immediately, because it needs to stimulate growth in the economy. So they can't put income tax up. They can't put VAT up. I wouldn't have thought, you know, around the world, we need the next 2 or 3 years to get some prosperity back, to get stuff moving again. Therefore, I would have thought in 12 months' time, we will still be in that process of rebuilding economies, and people will still have a level of disposable income. That's not to say we're not going to have global redundancies and global unemployment, which it's a very, very difficult question.
I agree with what you're saying there. I think you're absolutely right. My point, and I made it very badly, was do we actually think that in 12 months' time, that they will be licensed by the, whatever it is, the Jyväskylän authorities, the Finnish authorities, to put on an event with 100, 150,000 people descending on Jyväskylä. That's my point.
You're talking from a coronavirus perspective.
Will the virus still be? Exactly.
Who knows, Col?
Colin, just if you just go by previous epidemics, we've got three. Go back to Spanish flu. I think you had bubonic, Black Death before that, and there was a nasty one in between those ones back in just the pre-industrial times. They've all gone, you know, they've all come and gone, and in broad terms.
Let's get moved back to talking about Finland.
I think that the world will sort itself out remarkably quickly, just a question
of the
finances.
I want your memories
of
Finland. Right, so I can't go to Finland this year, but I've been at the other end, in a studio, in a box in London, you know, with the radio station, listening to everybody else having a fabulous time. And the stories I've heard tell of Finland and the photographs as well. And I have to remind anyone who is listening to this podcast to go to dirtfish.com and make sure you have a marvellous look at all the McLean photos that we now have access to as well. Mm. Because it is that series of photographs of Evgeny Novikov going a little bit too fast over a jump, which wasn't even a very big jump, I understand. But it's those series of photographs, and I think there's about six of them in the shot, where the car's taking off, and about the third photograph in, the brakes come on. But he's still about 20 feet off the ground. So the brakes aren't really doing much. But it's the Finland just kind of, that sums up Finland for me. It's so fast and dramatic and, oh no, I'm going too quick.
Well, it was a big jump, Lisa, but it shouldn't have been, as you could see from Novikov. He didn't quite break into orbit, but he can't have been far away from it.
Sorry, David, go ahead.
No, just that jump in Liustu. It's what Finland's all about, George, isn't it? Because you would drive down a bit of road and you would think, yeah, that's flat. And it's only experience and knowledge and nous that tells you, yeah, you can take it flat because the road over there is beyond the jump is straight and it's flat. But the nature of that jump, the topography, if you like, of that jump, will send the car in a very different direction. And because when he landed, you know, he landed the jump. You know, he landed the jump and carried on. So therefore, you know, it was a landable jump. But it's just Finland can pull you in and give you this confidence, and it will always bite you, won't it?
Yeah, I remember taking my Group N car to Finland in 1988 and going across a particular series of three jumps. And you know, we'd made pace notes. This was the shakedown of the car. We'd gone out in the evening and just drove down this bit of road to see what the car felt like very, very quickly and sort of approximately. It wasn't a proper shakedown test. But at that time, you could you could use the roads legally as long as you obeyed the speed limits. And it was 100 kph limit on that road, as I recall. So I wasn't breaking any rules or anything. But we went down the road and we just had a quick spin down it, not very fast, and the car didn't jump at all. And thinking, OK, you know, we've seen rally cars, a place I'd seen many times on the films. You know, it was that the end of Ruumäki, I think it is, where all the jumps are.
The roller bits, they just rolled, didn't they?
The roller bits. So we went across, we went across, I think, maybe 110 kph, 65 miles an hour, something like that. Nothing happened. The car didn't even feel like it was going to lift. Okay, we'll go a little bit faster. Went up to 70, nothing at all. 75, just about smashed the car to pieces.
Really?
So literally, at 70 miles an hour, there was nothing. That's 75 remarkable. Miles an hour, the first jump was crazy. I had to keep the power in to get lined up for the next one. We're probably just exactly the same speed. And we knew that was worse. Where am I going to go here? Mm. We landed in. We pretty well landed into the next jump. On that landing, it was very, very painful. And then I managed to lose a little bit of speed, but probably that was just the impact of the landing that lost it. Third one was okay. Wow. But crikey, I mean, that was a big checkout on the car.
Where did you crash that year on the rally? Because there is video footage of you crashing somewhere on the rally. Was it that
there
year?
There is. I think it was on about in stage 22 Sierra? Or 23, Sierra. It was across near Lahti, one of the stages just about as far away from rally base as you can get when I finally retired. We just slipped backwards off the road at quite a high speed. But we'd rolled two stages prior to that. Nice quick roll, actually. Didn't really lose much time. The car didn't end up back on its wheels. It was on its side. I jumped out, pushed it back onto the road with one spectator, got back in and drove to a few hundred metres to the stop line. And we didn't even lose a minute. It was quite good.
But here's a question for you, George.
Go on.
How do you then, you've just rolled the car twice and you've pushed it back onto the wheels, you get back in. And you know, the adrenaline's flowing, you drive the car to the end of the stage, but then you've got a couple of minutes to just sit back and think, I've just been upside down twice in a car, and now I'm going to start another stage and risk doing the same again. How do you put that to the back of your mind?
It's not a problem. You can feel what the car's doing. We had a broken gearbox mount. I was aware of that. So it made the car a little bit, you had to be a little bit careful accelerating out of slow corners. And it was a wee bit.
No. I'm not talking about the mechanics of the thing, George. Oh. Not the mechanics of the thing. Just the balls to drop the clutch.
It doesn't even enter into it. That year, I had a dreadful start to that rally. We'd been given a tyre deal with Pirelli, and they gave me really, really hard tyres, which I'd sort of protested about quietly, but I was getting them for free, so I didn't say too much. We had no traction on the first day at all. And we were languishing down about sixth or seventh in Group N, about a minute and a half off the lead, maybe even further. And then on the second day, we got given the good tyres because a number of the Fords had retired and we were getting their tyres. So I managed to pick up the soft tyres, and all of a sudden, we just lit the place up. And you could do anything with that car, from slipping and sliding around with no traction to all of a sudden having this fabulous traction. And I could really start to play with the car. And I probably got a bit exuberant throughout that second day. I'm probably quite lucky to survive to stage 22 when I look back, because I really was hanging it out big time. But we got I think we got either one or two fastest equal times. That was with Tommy in his Group N Lancia on one of them, and I think the other one was with Kjosti Hämäläinen, a former event winner back in the 80s. He was driving the same car as me. I managed to get an equal fastest time with him, and we're trading with him all day. We're very, very close all day until the point at which I, what was my pace note? Something like easy left to crest, easy right, and it should have been easy right over crest, or maybe easy right, maybe over crest, maybe even medium right, maybe over crest. Anyway, I came across the crest not quite pointing the right way. And by the time the weight came back at the car, we were well out of the line. But fortunately, there was a big logging area that had been cleared.
I've said this, I'm not sure if I've mentioned this one before, George, but just to cut back to what I was talking about, when in Cyprus, a few years ago in Cyprus, when Marco rolled in when it was 02 or something like that, and he rolled towards the end of the stage, same stage that McRae rolled on, and waiting at the stop line, and Marco comes in and the car is in bits. And, you know, just about managed to open the door, and he gives a brief explanation of what's happened. Totally matter of fact, as Marco Martin always is. And then just as he was putting it into first to pull away, he said, oh, yeah. And then it caught fire. And there'd been a fire in the cockpit. And there's, you know, so much of his mind and headspace was taken up with, what have I got to do? Get to the next stage, this.
That's all you're thinking about.
Yeah. And it didn't even enter his head.
That's all you think about,
And then on the onboard showed it was, you know, it wasn't a small fire. It was actually quite a big thing. And I find that, and I think, Cole, you've seen this, you know, you see that glazed look in drivers' eyes when they get to the end of a stage, especially in Finland.
Well, particularly in Finland. But it is remarkable, David, that, you know, yeah, there are one or two drivers that get quite excitable with what's going on at stage ends. But the majority of drivers, it is cool, calm, just calculating and just working out what's happened, what's gone on to the next stage, deal with it. And it doesn't matter whether it was a roll, a spin, a fire. Mm. And we've seen a few fires before in cars that drivers have had to deal with. You know, Solberg, that time Solberg had to reattach his steering wheel and still won the stage. I think it was on the bauxite stage in Greece, I think it was, wasn't it? You know, it is quite remarkable, George. But as you say, it is, I suppose, because you are so focused on everything else that's going on.
Especially in Finland, you know, that glazed look on the drivers' faces. I remember always hearing about the fact people said you had to think three or four corners ahead on the pace notes. Mm. Because that's, you know, if you make a mistake now, you'll pay in three corners' time. That might be 400 or 500 metres away, maybe even further. And it's absolutely true. I had the very strange experience of driving one stage without pace notes. The pace notes had been there was a mishap with them, shall we say?
You left them in the hotel. Someone left them in the hotel.
Did the dog eat them?
Or were they on the top of the car? Something happened. Tell the story.
No, absolutely not. It was. Look, we knew we hit the start of that stage. We knew there was no pace notes. My co-driver had the most terrifying ride for 48 kilometres.
Right, by the sound of it,
48 kilometres it was. No, not at all. He's a fabulous co-driver, he had to look out the window, which terrified the crap out of him. But I had an incredible capacity for memorising a road, so that particular stage had been over four times. But I do recall being really, really disappointed because I felt like I should have been, you know, a minute slower than I normally would have been. And I was only about 25 seconds.
Wow.
I'm thinking that means that I'm not good enough on my notes. That was my one thought. And I remember that car literally on some places on that road thinking, now this is the fast bit. It keeps going. Just keep the car in, keep it in, repeating right handers with an Armco on the inside. And then when the road dips away, you've got to dip the nose to the left before you get to it. So as you see the road starting to dip away, so all my senses were straining out, looking for the road dropping away. When I saw the road dropping away, I knew, and we were at the top end of fourth gear in that car. I'd be way up at 120 miles an hour. And I remember you had to dip the car to the left before you came across that crest, because if you went across the crest without it going that way, you were gone, and you were gone big, big, big time.
George,
it was quite,
can
quite
I tell
an
you,
time,
though,
but it was
can
fabulous.
Can I tell you? You mentioned your co-driver was terrified. You know, anyone that knows me knows I'm a bit of a coward, but I can genuinely say that I've really not. If someone said, you'll describe a situation where you felt genuine terror genuine terror. It's quite difficult. Quite difficult.
It's 10 times a day for you, Colin, isn't
well,
it?
Well, no. The most genuine
terror.
Was this
in Australia by any chance?
No, no, no. The most genuine terror was in Finland with Hayden Padden. And it took me by surprise because I knew that it was going to be a little bit dodgy because I'd been spectating on the stage and I'd seen him flying along. I've got photographs of him. Nearly.
This is the test day, Colin,
yeah.
The test day.
No, 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 this is the Monday after the rally, so it's in the World Rally Car. And I wasn't expecting to go in the car that day. I'd had a crash the year before in Australia, said I'd never get into a car again, got offered the opportunity to get into the car with Hayden, and I thought, oh, he's perfectly safe, and I'll never get this chance again. So got into the car, thought, yeah, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this. 3, 2, 1, I can't do this. I can't do it. And I closed my eyes, and I screamed in terror, in absolute terror. I was punching him at one point. I opened my eyes for a split second and he was laughing and pointing at me and I told him to get his king hands back on the steering wheel. And we got to the end of the stage, 4Ks down. He got onto the handbrake to spin it round and bring it back and I just yelled at him, stop, stop, stop. And he went, all right, Carl, take it a bit easier. No, you won't take it a bit easier. You will drive at 40 kilometres an hour back to the service area. And we got back to the service
Doesn't
area.
Doesn't that break rally cars?
But here's the thing. Yeah, probably. But here's the thing. It was the only run of the day that the onboard didn't work on because it would have been mighty entertaining. There are pictures of me in tears sitting in the car at the service area. It was genuinely, completely and utterly terrifying.
I think the trouble,
utterly terrifying.
The trouble is, Colt, I'll take your Hayden Padden and raise you a Yarko Nakara in a tatty old Mitsubishi Lancer.
Oh, no, thank
that's
you.
That's a good one. That's a good one. What a fabulous driver.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can't even remember the year. I think it was the year of Pirelli Star Driver. So what was that, 09 or 10 or something like that?
Yeah.
And whoever was looking after Yarko, again, I can't remember the name of the guy, but he offered to take a couple of us.
A couple of us
out to Yarko's house, which was way north of Evaskula, on the what would have been the Wednesday evening. So off we go, and there's this manky old Mitsubishi there, which is just about in Group N spec, but with a couple of holes in the floor.
Was that the green? Was that the green one?
No, it was there might have been a green panel on it, but I think it was mostly red. And there it was, just sitting waiting to go at the start. And all they'd done in Yarko's village, they had essentially put a couple of cars out and knocked on a few doors with the locals in the village to say, Yarko's doing his thing again tonight. And away we went. And oh my God, it was unbelievable because, George, Colin and I have no concept of what the road is in Finland. And, you know, we would come to a K left or something and you'd expect the car to be way out on the right. But you would never expect Yarko or any driver to essentially use the jump to totally change the kind of position of the car where it lands. And this is the thing, you know, we'd gone slowly over this first bit and you think, you can't go there because there's that. And then the next minute you're flying over the top of that because he knows over the top there it's fine to land. And that was the thing with notes is in Finland it's way more about describing a corner or anything like that. It's about describing where you have the car before the jump. So you're going to land it in that place over there. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it was mind blowing, but what a thoroughly lovely bloke. And I did.
We are running out of time. I've just got to say,
this is definitely a story for another day, but Yarko's father, he's brilliant. I think it was like a paper mill that they had as a family business. And Yarko's father really got into this and he sort of welcomed us all into his house. There's like four or five of us. Lovely, such a lovely bloke. And then Yarko's father decided to take us into Yarko's bedroom.
Oh, I see.
And I said to Yarko later, we've seen your bedroom. And he said, you have seen stack of Playboys. And laughed quite nervously. I'm not entirely sure which one of us was the most nervous at that point. But as I say, story for another time.
We are running out of time, Colin, and we've got something we do have to just tack on the end because you've teased us. You've mentioned Rally Dirtfish.
Yes.
Tell us more.
Hashtag Dirtfish Rally if you want to know more about Rally Dirtfish.
It is August the 7th and 8th. That is the absolute date that you need to keep at the forefront of your mind. It would have been the date for Rally Finland. It is now the date for Rally Dirtfish. And the event is running out of Otepää, 130 kilometres.
In which country?
In Estonia. Sorry. Yeah, that's quite a crucial point, isn't it? Estonia. And yes, you know, big plans for Dirtfish on the event. And we will obviously roll out some of those plans as soon as possible. But yeah, it's a big event. We can't really talk too much about it. There are very specific issues that we face, or the organizers face, with coronavirus, all of which are being tackled and, you know, tackled in such a way. Organizers, you know, we talk about people like Andrew Kellett. You know, these people have an unbelievable ability to think in a way that we would never think of dealing with stuff. It's, you know, it's a genuine privilege to watch these guys at work. So we'll be talking a lot more about that maybe next time, Lise.
Yeah, so anybody who's missing their rally hit, there is something coming up on the horizon. Might be far and distant, but that old rally engine sound might not be too far away.
Well, we shouldn't forget, we have already heard it briefly on Sunday afternoon with Rally Sweden Lockdown, won by Oliver Solberg, with his mum calling the notes. So that was
Pernilla.
Very entertaining. But, and you know, really weird. Did anybody watch that?
I did. Nope. I watched it. It was bizarre.
It was weird, wasn't it? To see
it was bizarre.
Torsby Sprint Stage in the summer. How very odd.
Wow. In the summer, it was a Scottish summer. It was piddling with rain, wasn't it? But you're right. You're right. But my goodness me, there were some very decent drivers, some very decent cars, and all going for it. There was a corner towards the start that was pretty fast, right, wasn't it? And oh, dearie me, one or two came very close to.
But it's
trouble. There, it was good. Good to see.
Odd to see Torsby in the Scottish summer, but it would be fabulous to see Evascula in a very much a Finnish winter. That's one thing
I've been there many, many times, and I have to tell you, I have actually been there one winter when there was hardly any snow.
Oh, really?
I want to see Sweden in full summer, and I want to see Jyväskylä in full winter.
Well, you always had the South Swedish rally in summer, and you've got the Arctic rally in winter, so it's all there for you, Colin.
It's not Jyväskylä and Torsby, is it? But I get what you're saying, George. It's almost good enough.
Yeah, it's more or less there.
You'd like to wear a coat into your awful Chinese restaurant in Jyväskylä, wouldn't you, Colin? There's not awful, in fairness. Sorry.
David Evans,
you will not be able to go back to Finland.
No, David, you're not coming again. It's not George, we're just leaving behind next time.
Absolutely.
He can go away for 2 hours for a cardboard beef burger and pay €40 for it. David, you go. That's awful. That's awful.
Sorry, mate.
Very fine Chinese.
Those fabulous people.
I'm very privileged to have been introduced to it.
Those lovely people will be listening, so I am very sorry. I look forward to that glass of water with my chicken chow mein next year. Thank you.
I think you're going to be refused entry next time around.
We'll make sure of it, Lisa. We will make sure.
But very quickly, that restaurant, it's famous for lots of things. There'll be lots of really good conversations there, but it is the site of the biggest argument, or the second biggest argument, that George and I have ever had. Ooh. It was explosive. In front of all these American friends, it was very, very entertaining. We'll save that for another day, though, because I've got a school run, boys and girls.
You have. You have been listening to Spin the Rally Pod here on dirtfish.com. Make sure you subscribe and then hit that. Have
Lisa,
a little drink or two.
Take more water with it, Lise.
Make sure you subscribe, and the next episode will drop into your podcast provider. And I have to say, lads, it's been an absolute joy listening to your stories once again. But it's made me want to go to Finland even more. But thank you, guys.
Thanks, Lise.
We'll do the next one before gin o'clock next time.
In lockdown, that's 11 in the morning.
Bye, Lise.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.